I have a lot of green participant ribbon.
He should have given me his goggles is what he should have done.
Every local G.I. Joe convention, local meaning wherever it is, it has its own personality. They're kind of like Pokemon.
Make it till you make it.
Oh, Joe Cousins podcast is my bane.
I read your book about the 10 most humble people in the world and how I trained the other 9.
JoeCustoms.com is the home of the world's premier G.I. Joe customizing website. Its purpose, to learn, improve, share, entertain, and showcase the work of the customizing community, wherever and whenever possible, to whomever shows interest. We'll help the community. Wherever there's customizing, Joe Customs is there.
Joe Customs!
Hi, this is P-Love, a.k.a. John, and this is a pre-recorded version of the Joe Customs podcast. I'm in the car, they're trapped with me, with Brian, a.k.a. Nova.
Hi.
And Pat, a.k.a. Not Picard.
Hey.
And we're headed towards Assembly Required in the rain. We're fighting the storm in an overpacked van.
No texting while driving, John.
It's a law. Buckle up for safety, kids. So what are you looking forward to at Assembly Required this year?
I just look forward to hanging out with some friends, hopefully make a little bit of money, and have some fun.
Yeah, don't be cheap, Joe fans.
It's okay to be cheap. It's just make sure there's a lot of cheap people there. That's all it is. You know, I'm okay with nickels and dimes. It adds up all in the end.
Nice. What about you, Pat?
I'm looking forward to spending time with people as well as the declassified booth.
Anything you can tell us about the D-class booth ahead of time? Anything to look out for?
Not anything in particular. I'm just kind of hoping that I brought some stuff that will be interesting myself, and I'm curious to see what other people bring. I'm trying to bring more than just modern stuff this time. I'm trying to bring some Valor versus Venom era stuff, so I don't know how well that's going to go over, but you never know. We'll see what people...
For those that aren't going, the Joe Customs booth is right next to the D-Class booth, so I'll definitely be spending a lot of time looking, checking out all the new stuff they have. One of the questions we got was for you, Brian. Somebody wanted to know, if somebody were starting entry-level casting, what are some, like, products, equipment, any tips that you can give us?
You have to make the decision if you want, you know, to pressure cast. That's really your first kind of hurdle, is if you want to buy a pressure pot and an air compressor and go the full route. I mean, that's the way I ended up going, just because I didn't think I got the quality that I wanted out of the parts otherwise. But if all you're going to do is some heads or, you know, a couple little simple pieces, I think you could probably get away with just using some simple smooth-on products. Smooth-on is kind of the brand that I like. All their stuff is on their website, smoothon.com.
What's been, like, the biggest problem area for you as you've, like, mastered it?
I mean, air bubbles was always the biggest problem, and for the most part, pressure casting has eliminated air bubbles, you know, just because the pressure crushes any kind of bubbles that happen in there. You'll still get a few, you know, just from improperly building a mold or stuff like that, but that time and money. Time and money.
Lots of time, lots of money. Yeah. What's been your favorite cast project so far?
I really liked how the I was able to cast a two-up buck. That was actually one of the first projects that I did with pressure. I mean, and for me, you know, I get a lot of joy out of just fiddling with a two-up buck. I was really happy with the Serpentors, which I forgot to bring. I was going to bring them for the Joe Customs table, but I didn't.
Thanks a lot.
Well, but so the two Serpentors I did, the Ronald McDonald one and the Fun School, this I Command and Fun Serpentor, I think they both turned out really well.
Yeah, I definitely like those. What do you have planned for JoeCon this year for a diorama? Are you already brainstorming?
I don't have any plans right now. Nothing has struck me. I mean, the Predacon dio was in the works for 2 or 3, you know, at least working the idea from the start to the end was at least 2 or 3 years to get it all finished.
I remember you mentioning it once for a Joe Customs diorama, and I was like, oh, that's such a great idea. We'll never be able to pull that off.
What convention was it that we were going to do the big space diorama?
I think it was either... It originally came up either the same year as the one that we did, the Arctic one, or we were thinking about for the next year. I can't remember, but I remember you laid it out exactly like it was boxed in. It would have the UV lights on it.
Yeah,
it was brilliant.
So that's probably, what, 2009, 2010?
Yeah, it was a while ago.
I'd say 4-year turnaround on a project for me, that's pretty good.
Hey, it got done, though.
Well, it got finished. It was still wasn't as much as I wanted.
What was that?
So for the Predacon Dio, I only ended up doing one set of molds for Predacon. So I got about 20, 25, 30 figures out of that set of molds. I intended to do another set of molds, but I had issues. My pressure pot, the seal failed while the molds were curing, so they developed a bunch of air bubbles. So all the parts came out with, like, warty malformations and stuff like that. So, and, I ran out of time. I ran into that time and money barrier that kept me from doing another, 20 or 30 Predacons.
I don't think anyone would have suspected that you didn't have enough Predacons in that dio.
Yeah.
You can never have too many Predacons.
I had some questions for Pat, too. So, for those that didn't know, Pat got third in the 2011 Frank and Joe contest with his General Blitz. And as far as I know, you've attended every Joe Con customizing panel, too, right?
Yes, actually, I have. That was actually my second win. The first one I had was, I think, 2 years before that, or 3 years, with Iron Stormtrooper.
Oh, that's right.
The Sergeant Savage line has been good to me in customizing contests.
Yeah, I mean, it really shows, like, some of those characters have a ton of potential. I think we saw it with the club's Iron Claw, and just taking and putting in 4-inch forms. I mean,
That's actually part of what I was trying to accomplish by making the custom. I was honored with the win, winning third place, but really I just wanted to kind of get, General Blitz back out there and in people's minds, perhaps, because the nice thing about entering the customizing contest at the convention is that all the customs kind of get there to be on a table, and you get the opportunity to talk face-to-face with people about your ideas and what it is that you're going for and what you like in G.I. Joe and maybe where you'd like, what kind of things you'd like to see in the future. I know that Iron Claw definitely would have been a contender for something that I would have made, but, he came out, and I was really happy with that.
And I know within the past few years, it's either been Hasbro employees judging or, Boss Fight, who are former Hasbro people, so getting it out there, you're definitely getting it in front of Hasbro's eyes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's definitely one of the things I appreciate. It's nice to have the recognition from them, even the years I haven't won, just knowing that, the item that I made was definitely looked at and, given some thought, that's definitely, it just feels good.
Pat is one of, like, the only people who enjoys getting the green participant ribbon.
I've got all mine, too.
I have a lot of green participant ribbons. O-rings only earn participation ribbons. That's about it.
Well, not Rom Space Knight. Rom Space Knight won.
But he was modern Skull. He wasn't vintage O-ring. Although,
didn't you have a Zartan win?
Yeah, technically, whatever, Toxic Water Zartan did take third place when I entered him. So I can't gripe completely 100% that they just hate O-rings.
Now they do.
Yeah, for the most part.
They pretty much hate the
O-ring. They've moved on. So the customizing question I had for you was, which is scarier, seeing somebody show pictures of a chopped-up 2-up or Gyre Viper sitting next to you learning how to use a Dremel?
I'm going to go with Gyre Viper sitting next to me learning how to use the Dremel, but that didn't happen for long because I moved.
Gary doesn't strike me as the type who'd be very handy with power tools.
And then he threw glue into the mix.
Add glitter and it's a full-on party.
He should have added glitter.
He should have given me his goggles is what he should have done. I should have been able to borrow them.
Safety goggles, Doc.
Safety goggles.
Safety goggles head.
All right. Something else I want to talk about is Gentle Giant showed off their rock and roll that they're releasing. The 12-inch based entirely on the 3 3/4-inch original molds, straight arm and everything. But last night I was at Toys R Us, and I got the flyer with me right here. But they had a 4-foot-tall Michelangelo based on the animated style that had the as Brian called them, the LARP nunchucks, you know, the role-playing nunchucks that's stored in his back. And I thought, maybe Gentle Giant missed the mark. You know, maybe they should have went for something even bigger that would have been more statue-like than just a 12-inch Joe that wasn't actually a 12-inch Joe, not the way we think about it. So I'm going to turn it over to them and ask them what they think.
So Gentle Giant actually did a 6-foot Boba Fett? So obviously they started with the 12-inch Star Wars figures, but then they just put out like a 6-foot Boba Fett, right, Pat?
I'm pretty sure they did. I haven't seen it myself, but you've mentioned it to me before.
I don't know if it's actually out, but they have talked about it.
I think they've also done like Stormtrooper, maybe. Maybe Vader. I want to say they've done a couple of them.
Yeah.
But so we've talked about this at our little Johio monthly dinners and, you know, thought how fun it would be to do a version 1 Snake Eyes or a version 2 Snake Eyes, you know, just...
In 1-1 scale.
Like yeah, life size. Human scale, you know. Like, so when you're going to a toy show, you can put him in the front seat and drive in the HOV lane.
Actual O-ring or more statuesque?
Well, it would still be constructed like an O-ring figure, but I think just based on size and weight, you would have to modify it with an internal mechanism or structure as opposed to a giant, you know, bicycle inner tube.
Because that's one thing we've talked about with the Gentle Giant. Will it actually have an O-ring, or will it be more like a zip tie kind of deal on the insides?
I'm guessing the Gentle Giant figures will have an O-ring of some sort. I could be entirely wrong about that, but I would just think that that'd be part of the appeal of having the exact same thing at larger scale. Whenever we were talking about doing a larger Snake Eyes, I mean, there were a lot of things that came up. But I think that we probably also want to do some kind of filler, like a foam filler on the inside, kind of have it be like a hard shell of plastic around foam, because the weight of that thing, like if you've ever picked up something, like even just a 2-up made of resin, it's very heavy, you know, for how big it is. That's one of the first things you notice when you pick it up. And to have something that would be, you know, 5 or 6 feet tall, because... I mean, 4 feet tall for that Ninja Turtle. It's pretty sweet, and Ninja Turtles, that's probably the correct size for a life-size Ninja Turtle, but not for a life-size Snake Eyes.
Right.
So we would want to go, you know, full 5 or 6 feet tall. Well, not five, but, you know, make them about the size of an average person. But, you know, how do you do that and have it not be 300 pounds or, you know, something that's just going to be difficult to get those joints to stay in place whenever you want to pose it.
Right. I want to be able to pick it up, put it in the passenger seat, and go in the HOV lane.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I mean, a full-size human head made out of resin would probably be 50, 60 pounds. I mean, and, you know, the other thing is, just even thinking about that, 50 to 60 pounds of resin isn't cheap. You know, even if you buy the cheapest resin you can get, that's still going to be a lot. And that's kind of been one of the hurdles we run into, is like, who's the Snake Eyes loving sucker we can find to fund this project?
I can tell you that the Michelangelo Ninja Turtle one was definitely roto-cast. It was hollow inside, and my daughter has like a 3-foot-tall Rapunzel, Disney's Rapunzel, which scares me. I'll turn the corner and there's this little girl staring at me, but it's more like a giant Barbie doll where it's solid in parts but mostly hollow in the main part.
Yeah, probably blow molded. Similar. I mean, that's how they make the big 3-foot-tall whatever Stormtroopers and John Cena's and all that sort of stuff, right?
The Jax stuff?
The Jax.
Yeah, I think so.
I imagine most of those are blow molded where it's like inflated like a balloon.
Yeah, so the other gigantic hurdle is, how do you get a you know, 3¾-inch figure to be 6 feet tall? You know, do you scan it in and 3D print it? Do you actually go through the process of, you know, making a mold and then expanding the mold the number of times required to get it that size? Because once you start getting in molds that large, you might end up with issues with it you know, being misshapen. But then if you go the 3D route, there's also the expense of 3D printing such a physically large object. And then you've got your weight problems again, and you're probably going to have to cast it anyway in order to do some kind of rotocasting and then a foam filler.
They also, you know, I mean, even 3D printing, you know, has limitations on size. Like most hobby grade kind of 3D printers have like a, you know, 5x5x5 maximum space. So I mean, just think about, you know, if you just made a shell around yourself and had to cut it into, you know, 5x5x5 squares. I mean, you're probably in thousands of little segments just to make it happen.
So, I know for like the cosplay helmets and stuff, they'll sculpt foam and then do like a plaster and then plastic over it. But even then, it's still like a 20-30 pound head. So I'm trying to, yeah.
I figure, you know, long term end project would end up. It would be made end up being made out of fiberglass. So, you know, you would have your mold would be a brush on mold, and then you would brush the fiberglass resin into it and put the glass actually into the fiberglass, much like people make, you know, boats or car parts or anything like that. So
that definitely would be most certainly the way to go, but you still have the problem of how do you get from that 3¾-inch all the way up to 6 feet tall. I mean, there's also the option of somebody just re-sculpting it, but then you might run into the issue of it not quite looking like the actual figure blown up into full size.
And the cost of hiring an artist to do that. I remember John Warden talk about how much they had to pay professional sculptors to sculpt, you know, a figure is as much as a brand new motorcycle. A nice motorcycle in this world.
Yeah, we're not thinking about doing this professionally. I mean, this is an amateur gig all the way through. You know, from the organization to the finishing project, it's amateur.
You would also need, if you scanned it in, you'd have to have somebody that could fix any, on a small scale, would be a minor imperfection, a small gouge, a scrape, you know, even a mint figure would still have some minor imperfection that on a much larger scale, you'd have a giant scrape on it, you know, instead.
Yeah. Well, and even, you know, I mean, you figure these figures are sculpted at 2-up, so you could get good, tight, small details, you know, when you shrunk the figure down. If you keep blowing it up, I mean, the detail is just going to kind of wash out once you get up to a, you know, a full-scale figure.
Right.
You know, what people are expecting there, it's just going to be
like a pixelated picture blown up.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's just kind of blurry.
Yeah, sure. it's smooth and you lose detail.
So there's some hurdles. Is that what you're saying?
There's some hurdles. Saying there's not a big pile of cash, you know, just pushing the project to get done.
Oh.
So.
I mean, we were just saying O-rings are, like, dead, and now you're doing a 1-1 O-ring figure. I'm sure there's people lining up.
I think it comes out to be about an 18-up. Is that what it is? Instead of a 2-up, it's an 18-up.
18-to-1.
I think that's what the math came out to.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you figure 18 scale, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
1 to 18.
Yep,
makes sense.
Right.
And a figure stand.
No. Forget you and your figure stands.
Whoop. No accessories? Then it's not complete.
Yeah, and once you get that large, I mean, legally, if they were to actually make that, they'd have to have an orange tip on Snake Eyes Azuzi.
Oh, wow.
That can be done by casting. But.
Yeah, but he's right. That's something I would have never thought of. It's like you have to worry about that kind of stuff, too.
Again, amateur operation. Not worried about laws or any of that. I mean, because really, do we even have, you know, the license to do this? You know, do we need to get Hasbro's okay?
Maybe. Maybe his tank got it wrong by a few inches. Maybe there isn't a 6-inch line coming. Maybe it's the 18-to-1 line that's coming.
There's also the discussion of whether or not you have him be a straight arm Snake Eyes or swivel arm Snake Eyes, whether or not you're doing version 1 or version 2. I think that I would be in for just a, you know, make it feel as classic as it can and have it be a straight arm 1982 Snake Eyes. That way the mold could also, you know, we maybe get another character out of it. by changing up the light. And
now we have to do the original 13. You do one, you got to do all 13.
If I don't have one with a broken thumb and a broken crotch, I won't be satisfied.
That's that.
I don't know if I feel right making one-to-one Scarlet.
I can think of a few collectors we could sell that one to.
Oh, Baroness is going to be a hot seller. Hot seller. Do you make the file card like a picture frame sized file card?
So, Driver Ever, on the eve of Assembly Required, what are you looking forward to the most tomorrow?
All the attention I'll get. Everybody kissing my ass as usual and doing everything for me so I don't have to do a thing. People asking me if I want some food.
I wish random people would come up and put me on a podcast while I'm walking down a street.
Yeah, that's usually reserved for Gyre Vipers, and there's only one.
I like to wait until I get Brian in a van on a 10-hour road trip.
I'm only good for short bursts. Wait, what am I looking forward to most?
Yes.
I'd say food, but we just had that. Des Moines food is the best. No, every local G.I. Joe convention, local meaning wherever it is, it has its own personality. They're kind of like Pokemon. So with AR, I always say that, CoilCon is like JoeCon without the distractions. And I always say that Assembly Required is like a convention without the...
lines?
No, it's... Alright, so everyone's just here to relax. So CoilCon, you have like an entire round table of people involved. You have like 12 people that make the convention run. And so these people are always busy, and they don't necessarily get a chance to relax. At JoeCon, everyone's busy. You're standing in line, you're buying something, you're trying not to buy something. You brought your wife along, and she's not letting you buy anything, whatever. You know, there's golden tickets and panels, whatever, fine. You come to Assembly Required, and Brian and Steve, they run it pretty much. Obviously, we're all helping. I mean, that's a given, but... it's two guys, and so everyone who comes here who runs CoilCon or who, you know, is involved in Johio or whatever, they get to kind of relax. So you get a lot of people out of their element and who are normally busy either, you know, working with Chris Neal or, you know, doing this or doing that, whatever it is. So AR is kind of like just this super relaxed convention that also takes itself very seriously as far as the way that it's run and then the exclusives they put out. I don't know. It's just very different. I think all the conventions have their own sort of personality, like I said. And ARs is just this, everyone's just always just very, like, I don't know, relaxed no matter what they're doing. So does that make sense?
Yeah, I agree in the sense that it is a very different kind of show.
It's very different, and it's hard to really put into words.
Like I learned today, Assembly Required isn't just the name of the show. It's active participation in order to get the show ready. A bunch of dealers taking time out to like put together the kids' packages that they're handing out to kids for free.
It's very community-oriented in a very different way than other conventions are. Like I said, it's not a slight on other conventions. It's just what it is. You know, the very first AR, there was like 15 people or whatever. You know, now it's, I mean, there was how many people at our dinner? You know, like 30 people, whatever. Yeah. And that's people that we know. Like, that's like, that's obviously a growth. But you saw today, no one hesitated to go down and help get things out of the cars except for me. So, because I don't, I mean, I'm going to lift something. Okay. Gyre Viper. But, you know, it is important to recognize it. And Coil's benefited from this, too. I mean, there's like a Coil, like, these guys all just come together to help out without being asked, you know. Like I said, AR is different because it's only run by two guys. They don't have the sort of Knights of the Round Table that Coil has. They certainly don't have what JoeCon has. You know, it's just Brian and Steve putting their time where their feet are. It's just a different, it's different. It's just different. And it's really hard to put into words. But... everyone always comes back. Like, I've never met anyone who's gone AR and been like, I'm not going next year. Like, everyone loves it. So there's something to be said for that. So anyways, that's what I'm looking forward to, is that atmosphere tomorrow. And I'm experiencing it right now, actually, except for the fact that I'm talking to you. That's driving me nuts. Yeah.
Hi, Brian. How's Assembly Required been from the showrunner's side?
Pretty good. Smooth, I would have to say. We haven't really had much problems. Attendance has been steady throughout the day, building up a little bit, which is great. A lot of traffic, a lot of compliments on the location and the new layout. Everybody was thrilled with the Joe Customs panel. loved Gary's panel about D-Class. It just seems like everybody's pretty chill. Everybody's enjoying it.
So. It's a good location. I liked it. Like, there's enough restaurants and stuff outside.
Yeah.
And I talked to a couple of dealers. They said it's been steady all day.
Yeah. It's cool. And I love the flow that you get from this place. And plus the fact we can grow. Like, we can stay here for a while and we can grow. We've got a couple more rooms we can tap into that we haven't tapped into yet. So, yeah. I was surprised at lunchtime we had gone through like 100 packets, so I don't know. I go back and take a look and find out. Those packets are a great way to tell what attendance is like without having to click numbers or anything like that.
Sure.
So, yeah, but if we, I'll probably guess that by the end of the day it'll be the same as last year.
Cool.
But Hawks were on, getting their ass kicked, so that's great. That's what I need to hear. So.
No, it's been fun. I've definitely had fun.
Yeah.
All right, Steve.
Yes.
Post-show thoughts.
Yes. It was good. We had fun.
What was your favorite part as an official co-show runner person?
Yeah. I think...
table gatherer, assembly requirer.
You know, I love seeing the kids get excited about the prizes that we give them and the kind of the special stuff that we've set aside for them. And so when they get excited, it's really cool. I had one guy say, yeah, this was really neat. This was something my son and I could do together. And so, like, you know, that's kind of what it's all about, and that's why we do it. And so it's a lot of fun.
We were talking, the way you guys handle the raffle makes it part of the event. It's not something that's kind of, like, tacked on in between stuff.
You mean how it's long and drawn out?
No, I mean, the kids running up to grab prizes,
yeah,
excited, showing off
cool.
Like it's a trophy.
And yeah.
All the adults... cheering them on a little bit
and going aww,
you know, adults being jealous of what somebody won or something, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. But standing right next to you with their prizes, it's fun.
It was very cool.
It helps support the show.
Yeah, and we're very thankful for all of that. I mean, we have such great community that comes and supports the show and helps us and donates prizes and donates time and energy and sets up and tears down. And it's, you know, it's not one or two people doing it. It's a whole kind of community of people gathering around to make AR happen. And couldn't be more excited to be a part of that and just very, very thankful.
Your flag was a big hit. I saw lots of kids come in.
Yeah, we restored that flag and had to show that baby off, you know? So
I let my daughter lie on it.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
All right. Let's go get some zombie burger.
Are you still recording?
Yeah, I'm still recording.
Oh, okay.
What, yeah, we're going to zombie burger, right?
We are, yeah, eventually. Once we get all this stuff cleared out, so.
Yeah. All right, okay, I lied. We're going to pack up for about another hour, and then eventually
get there.
The Dead Elvis is worth it.
All right.
The Walking Chad isn't bad, from what I've heard, too.
Walking Chad?
Is that the one that's got the macaroni and cheese crust?
It comes with a side of angioplasty, so it's very delicious.
Can I post that picture of you sucking off the thing? Okay, we're recording. So, not that you were sucking anything off. Oh, Joe Cousins Podcast is my bane. I see the wrong thing. I mean, this is Gyre Viper, your responsible pre-production expert, representing the classified.
Hey, I'm going to record.
Okay.
So, post-assembly required, how was the D-Class panel?
I thought the declassified panel was embarrassing and disappointing. I don't think it lived up to everyone's expectations. I've got nothing but negative feedback. I don't think I'll be doing another one ever again. That's what you want to hear. The truth, though, is that it was incredible, and I did an amazing job, and everyone loves me. And did I tell you, Steve, I'm going to get a shirt made that says I'm the most humble person in the world?
Yeah.
That's a good shirt.
Yeah, that's a good shirt.
Completely accurate.
I read your book about the 10 most humble people in the world and how I trained the other 9. It was I couldn't put it down.
You couldn't put it down?
What was
the question, though?
For you, what was the thing that you thought people seemed to really be attracted to that...
We've been doing all the declassified panels in reverse because it gives you an opportunity to get comfortable with what you know and then have it stripped away from you. And as I said, leading up to this panel, promoting this panel, I was going to strip away the reality of J. Joe and show you what J. Joe also is as... in regards to what you already know about it. And so doing it in reverse, I was able to pace it in a way that every reveal was a little more and more staggering in its own right, I guess.
I would say outside the realm of comfortability.
Yeah.
Like you think you know, but...
So I started out with things that people had seen, like War Dog and that kind of thing, and things that you can see on Yojo. Touched on replicators, which, you know, we did a panel on that in Canada, and we've talked about it before. It was in the... There was a lot of replicator stuff in the declassified Star Brigade issue that we put out. So I started with the stuff that people were mildly comfortable with, no matter how outrageous they were, and just started stripping away more and more to the point where I had it timed so that I knew what stuff would get gasps, what stuff would make people go, oh, like, I could predict the groans, I could predict the what, and I could break the laughter in a way that it made it much easier to... It's hard, because when you sit a group of people down who have an idea about G.I. Joe and you say, hey, look at this, and you're, like I've said many, many times, to have to remind them that they're looking at G.I. Joe, or they have to remind themselves... I think it's the only way it could be done was, I mean, if you notice, obviously anyone listening to this, whether or not it gets edited out isn't the point, they weren't there, but there's no segue. There's no way to segue from one, and that's why I call it the freak show. There's no connecting them, and I wanted that. I wanted to be uncomfortable and abrupt, because that was part of the, I wanted it to be an experience, not just a bunch of pictures and information.
I think it went over really well. I enjoyed it.
I thought I was funny.
I wouldn't go that far, but overall, the panel was good.
Oh, and I'm happy it was, because it's like I said in the panel, declassified panels aren't about the person giving the panel. It's not, we don't make this stuff, we didn't make this stuff, we had nothing to do with it. And so we want all the attention to be on the information and on the images. And the only way to do that is find a way to make it interesting for everyone. And if the only way I can do that with this stuff is to make people uncomfortable, then A, done my job, and B, hopefully I've made it uncomfortable.
I think the trick with Napakard to get him more involved is to say the exact wrong thing, knowing that he has to correct you.
He didn't want to be on the panel because he knew I put it together. You know, and he wanted to do his own panel, but he didn't have time to put one together. So he really wanted to do a panel, and he couldn't do it. And so I was like, I'm just going to force him to participate because I know him. So it helps when I say something lightly argumentative that him and I have battled about or gone over and over and over again, and then he's sort of forced to say something about it. So I kind of lured him into that. It didn't help him that he was standing the whole time because that made it easier to pick on him because then everyone had to turn and look at him. I was like, you might as well get him set up here. But anyways, I hope you enjoyed the panel. I hope all our listeners at home joined the panel. I'm so tired. That's the thing about that panel, is it mentally exhausted me.
Yeah.
Because it's stuff that even I'm not completely... I mean, like, some of that stuff I just gotten, like, a few days ago, like, images, like, permission to use images, and, like, even I haven't wrapped my head around it yet. So I'm a little, like... Duh.
And it's the end of the day.
And it's the end of the day. Or the beginning of the night.
Beginning of the night.
So.
Did you have fun?
I'm always having fun.
Are you coming back next year?
Am I coming back next year? Well, considering I'm the only one who's ever come here every year, because Stephen Bryan took a year off in, 2018. I guess I'll come back next year. It's not like they have to invite me anymore. In fact, they'd probably try to uninvite me if they could.
We tried one.
That was 2017. It was by the next year they didn't show up. You'll figure this all out when it comes to pass many years from now.
In the book. The 10 most humble people I know and how I train the other 9. By Gary.
So what did you think of the show?
I loved the show.
What was your favorite part?
The JoeCustoms.com booth.
Go Blue Lasers.
Go Red Lasers.
Dennis, what was your favorite part of the show?
I have to say the custom figure contest entries, they were just fantastic. Probably the best set of customs I've ever seen. And whoever won that just had to be something on a premier level of talent. Yeah,
somebody Star-Lord seemed to have won.
Really?
Yeah. I heard it was a close contest. Dennis won with his Star-Lord custom. We're all very happy for him.
We're bitterly, bitterly happy.
Bitterly.
I voted for P-Love Star-Lord.
I didn't enter
Star-Lord. Oh, sorry.
What was your favorite part of the show?
I don't know. I'm probably being done with the panel.
Yeah, the panel went over pretty well. It was fun, but...
I heard it was great.
Matt, what was your favorite part?
Actually doing the panel. Getting the... You know, it wasn't like there was a ton of people there, but the people who were there seemed to learn a lot. We got some good feedback. I love being able to, you know, share this knowledge and, you know, get people... you know, less afraid, I guess.
Yeah.
That's always a positive thing for me.
Michael's quick cast, Joe Zard did a quick cast, and we've never actually done that for a live tutorial, and that went over really well. There were a lot of questions about that.
Yeah, no, that was a cool. I hope we can do that again in the future. I know he did it for a couple people at the table at AR last year, but to actually do it as part of a panel, that was really fun.
It really went well. You guys did an outstanding job. But,
Dennis did dry brushing and talked about decals, and there were questions about decals and stuff. It was fun.
Surprisingly smooth, if that's not something that you guys have done before in that format.
Not in that format.
Make it till you make it.
That's what customizing is.
Exactly.
And I didn't cuss. I didn't swear.
It went really well.
There were two children in the room, so that helped.
Yeah. Is your purse?
Ouch.
It's recording now. So, what did you think of the show? What was your favorite part?
Okay, this has been my fourth show. I was at the first one in 2011. It's expanded quite a bit in those past 4 years. The best part is the turnout. There seems to be a lot more people coming from across the country. As word spreads, I think it's going to continue to grow. It's a lot of fun. If you're in the area and it's free, stop by. I mean, you can't beat it. There's a lot of selection. The panel's been really good. I don't know what else to say, John.
How did, as a dealer,
as a dealer, it went really good. There was a lot of good traffic. People from all ages looking for a variety of stuff. I sold a lot of 12-inch stuff, a lot of 3¾-inch stuff. You know, just about every type of G.I. Joe was seen to be selling quite well.
I really liked the response that we got on your quick casting during the panel. Like, was there anything from the panel that stood out for you? Like, there were a lot more questions about casting than there was on any other particular topic.
The thing I really liked was Matt's little tutorial on using the hot glue to make a neck post. That is pretty cool. That was
handy. It works.
It is handy. And there's nothing like getting big sweaty bear hugs from Pilo.
I got a question for you.
Joe Michaels.
He's not nearly sweaty enough.
No. All right. Yeah, we're almost done packing up. That's us from Assembly Required. Hope to see you all next year.
Once again, the world is a safe place to be, thanks to the G.I. Joe team of experts. G.I. Joe, a real American hero.
Lofton kept coming back to the table asking where he was.
Who, him or Billy?
Jeff.
Oh, because Billy looks like Ellen DeGeneres. Didn't take a bath.
That was so much funnier the first time.
That's how that works.